So we're just about to roll into step 8 and 9. So we're back on page 76. We just wrapped up step 7, talking about an 8-step amends list. So in the middle of page 76, it says, now we need more action. Isn't that just the resounding gong that I hear after consistently? Just when I think I've done something, it's like, okay, moving on. So it says, without which we find that faith without works is dead. And I tell you what, that's a theme that's all throughout this literature, that faith without works is dead. I can believe all day long, but until I'm willing to put action behind my belief system, it really doesn't amount to anything. So we're going to find that's repeated over and over. It says, let's look at steps 8 and 9. We have a list of all persons we have harmed and to whom we are willing to make amends. We made it when we took inventory. So what we're looking at on an 8-step list is who am I, who is necessary for me to go out and get in front of, face to face, and make direct amends with. Now, all those people on my inventory that I saw that I harmed, I most certainly owe amends to. But there's also an additional names that need to be added to that list, because not everybody that I've harmed, I've been upset with. Not everybody made it to inventory. There was a whole host of people that I had terribly harmed, that there was no resentment in connection with it. And so at this point, all I'm doing is making the list. It's an easy place to kind of get hung up and overwhelmed and get real scared about, oh my God, the huge list. All you're doing at this point is making the list. The 8th step is not the 9th step. I'm making a willing list, and then my mind begins to talk to me about certain things, such as, well, I don't even know his last name. I don't even know which state she lives in. I doubt my path will ever cross with that person again. Do not be fooled about the power of God. Don't shortchange yourself in that area. Your job at this point is to put the name on the list. Period. That's it. There's nothing else required of you at that point. I've got to put the name on the list, be willing to get in front of them, right? There are some people that it was not pertinent for me to make amends to them at that time. And I had to get with a sponsor and look at that stuff. And we're going to delve into when is it not appropriate to make an amends to somebody. And there are a few cases where it's not. But I still have those people. They are still on my 8-step list. And should God make that appropriate, I hold myself in readiness to make the amends. So now is not the time to be running all these things through your brain. It's just a time to place those names down on paper. So it says, we subjected ourselves to drastic self-appraisal. Now we go out to our fellows and repair the damage done in the past. We attempt to sweep away the debris which is accumulated out of our effort to live on self-will and run the show ourselves. If we haven't the will to do this, we ask until it comes. And there's your 8-step prayer. If there are people that, you know what, I am not willing to get in front of that person and make amends, start praying now. Get into prayer now that God change your heart and give you the willingness to do so. Because, you know, it's not always right off the bat that you're willing to make amends to everybody. Okay, well, do we just stop short? No. What can we do with it? Where can God guide me with this? So I'm going to begin to say those prayers and ask for the willingness. Then it's going to give me something that might shift my gears. It says, remember, it was agreed at the beginning we would go to any lengths for victory over alcohol. I have friends that ask their protégés to write in the front of their big book on day one, I'm willing to go to any lengths for victory over alcohol. And when they start balking, they get to go back and look where they signed and dated that they were willing to go to any length. I think that's a riot. I love it. And the question then becomes, what lengths did you go to for alcohol? Really? I mean, I'm on snow days. They've shut down the town on snow days. I'm skidding across in my truck trying to get to the liquor store, willing to go to any lengths. Now I don't want to go make amends because it's raining outside. Yeah. Thinking, I could fishtail. Nobody in Texas knows how to drive in the rain. Everyone knows that, right? Really? Are you willing to go to any lengths or are you not? When I'm trying to get liquor in this kid's system, I'm knocking old ladies down. I'm running 100 miles an hour. Bless you if you're in my way. But then when I want to make amends, it's every excuse in the book. No. No. Do you want to get well or do you not? Did you read Dr. Bob's nightmare or did you not? Where did he balk? Where did he pull up short? Amends. Willing to do anything but have the humility to stand in front of another person and say, you know what? I was wrong. And what happened? He got loaded. And after he got loaded, he got out and one day made all of his amends. Nothing will beat you into a state of reasonableness like liquor. Nothing. Right? Do you want to be that guy or can you press on? So then it's going to begin to talk to me about approaching people on a spiritual basis, why we should do that sometimes, why we shouldn't do that other times. It talks about not emphasizing the spiritual feature on our first approach with certain people. At the moment, we're trying to put our lives in order, but this is not an end in itself. Our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be a maximum service to God and the people about us. It's seldom wise to approach an individual who still smarts from our injustice to him and announce we've gone religious. Let me set that little scenario up for you. After you tear somebody's life down around your alcoholism and your selfish and inconsiderate habits, 3 days later, you've detoxed, want to show up on their front doorstep and talk about how you found God. No, ma'am. No, it starts like this. I was wrong. That's how that starts. Nobody cares that you found God. They want the money that you took back, right? Mm-hmm. They need to hear an explanation for what the things that you did, an apology of sorts, a promise not to do those things again, an in-depth conversation. Not that you found God. Is it wonderful that you found God through the steps? Yes. Have tact and common sense when announcing those things. Right? When it talks about leading with the chin, I'm setting myself up. I can kill a future opportunity to be beneficial to somebody else. If I can tone it down and approach it in a different way, it can be handled very differently. It says, why lay ourselves open to be branded fanatics or religious bores? We may kill a future opportunity to carry a beneficial message. See, when this person that you've mishandled your amends with, it's time for them to get sober, or it's time for somebody in their family to get sober, they're not going to look back on you showing up doing cartwheels on their front doorstep about finding God and think, that's the person to call. No, but when I can approach you in a calm directive, I'm working a spiritual program of action. Part of this program is that I make restoration to you for the harms that I've done. Something to that effect. You can bet then go, you know, that girl was in sobriety. I don't remember what exactly she said she was doing, but she seemed like she was on a different path. Maybe I'll have to call her. There's a way to handle it and a way not to. There's a couple of qualifications for making amends listed on page 77. And the first one is in that first paragraph where it says, but our man is sure to be impressed with a sincere desire to set right the wrong. I don't know if you've ever been on the playground with toddlers. I used to work at a daycare, which was a riot. But have you ever seen a mom snatch a kid up and say, you better say you're sorry? And you watch that chunky little toddler step over and go, sorry, to the other little kid, right? That is not a sincere desire to set right or wrong. I don't make amends because Julie says so. Get clear on that. I hear that all the time. I made amends because my sponsor said I had to. Really? Is that a sincere desire? Is that what the other person receiving that amend needed to hear? No. It's my sponsor's job to rub my little nose in the fourth column. That's where the sincerity comes from. My creator, me seeing the truth about me and the damage I've caused. Now I'm willing. Now I want to clean it up because I see how wrong I was, but not because I've been made to. Mm-hmm. I've been made to. And I will forget that, you know, hearing a story about somebody that went to make amends to somebody and, you know, here's the deal and I know I have to make amends to you. Wow. What a bad feeling to have to hear an amends like that. Don't do that. Don't do that. It says he's going to be more interested in a demonstration of goodwill than in our talk of spiritual discoveries. I've got to get crystal clear that at this point I don't have any credibility with people. So for me to continue to announce that I have found, you know, the good Lord above, you know, with zero credibility. 2 weeks ago I'm robbing you. You know what I mean? Let's see a demonstration of what you found. Right. Sleeping with your husband, that's a great one. Let's see a demonstration of what it is you found. Because if you found something, you don't need to talk about it, do you? No. Your actions manifest. And it talks about earlier on in the book about a sponsor that his whole deportment, think about that word, his whole deportment shouts at the new prospect he's a man or a woman with an answer. Hmm. See, there's no need for me to be running my mouth, because how long have you been running that mouth? For years. And it usually sounds like this, I'm sorry, I'll never do it again. That's one reason that me personally, this is an opinion, I don't say the words I'm sorry in amends. I just don't. I said it for too long. It sounds like this, I was wrong. That's something they've never heard before. I was wrong. Right? The second question or qualifications little ways down in that second paragraph. It says, we go to him, that last line, we go to him in a helpful and forgiving spirit, confessing our former ill feeling and expressing our regret. Right? That's another thing I say when I make an amend. I regret treating you the way that I have. And no matter what he does or what he has done in the past, I go to him in a helpful and forgiving spirit because I don't get to continue to take his inventory. Right? That's about me trying to get free. This is about me and my Creator. It never matters what he says or does or what she says or does. This is about, can I lay my head down on the pillow having demonstrated to my God that I was willing to go to any lengths today to clean up the past? You may roll your eyes. You may argue with me. You may not accept my amends. So not my business. Mm-hmm. So not. It's about me and God, period. And once you know that, you can remove expectations. You can remove irritations about the way they behaved in it. Right? You want to know what your motives are? Start clocking the way they respond to your amends. Well, she didn't admit her faults. Mm. Right. And what was your expectation? That she would? Did you need that? Guess so. Get with a sponsor on that. They can show you what your motives are. Sometimes it's best to wait a few days before you run out and make all of your amends. Sometimes we make them for the wrong reasons. The girls always want to make amends to the boyfriend right away. Mm-hmm. I need to get back in the bed. Right? No, you don't. Calm down.
It's the and you think it's the guys.
It's the women. We're a hot, hot mess. And then it talks about the question of how to approach the man we hated will arise. Let me assure you that's going to arise. Because you may have gotten a better attitude through inventory, but you still remember, don't you? We don't forget.
Mm-hmm.
I still remember. And so it says, directive. I love this. It may be that he's done us more harm than we've done him. And though we may have acquired a better attitude, we're still not too keen about admitting our faults. Wow. Nevertheless, with a person we dislike, we take the bit in our teeth. That's a big old suck it up from the Big Book Alcoholics Anonymous. I love that. It's harder to go to an enemy than to a friend, but we find it, circle those words, much more beneficial to us. Harder to go to an enemy than to a friend, but we find it much more beneficial. See, that's the thing. I'm going to sit across from the man or woman that I absolutely can't stand and make amends. And I've done that with no expectation that they would do anything, make amends back to me, admit they're wrong, none of that. I tell you what, that's some of the coolest experiences. You want to get free? Don't go to your mama. She loves you. She's going to say, baby, I don't care as long as you're sober. They don't care. Don't go to your spouse. Go to the man you can't stand. Mm-hmm. Go to the man that when you think you see his car six lanes away in traffic, you're like trying to pull the visor, you know, hiding. Can't stand him. Go do that. Watch what happens. See, that's the problem. Everybody wants to do the real easy ones first. Then you catch a little bump. Little spiritual bump off of that, then you quit. And you've got all these hard ones, so to speak, looming in the balance where the real freedom lies, and you don't do them. And then you get drunk and go, but I don't understand, I made a whole bunch of amends. No, you didn't. You went to a whole bunch of people that you knew were happy with you anyway. Approach it differently and see if something doesn't happen. But I've got to understand the point of amends is not to apologize, it's to make it right. That's what that word actually means. It means to make it right. So that's a question I'm going to ask you when I make amends to you. I'm going to tell you specifically, I've been selfish, dishonest, inconsiderate with your feelings. Whatever it was that I was wrong about, I'm going to tell you what that is. And let me tell you something, guys. If you can't be big enough to say what you did, don't go. I don't know if y'all have ever had that experience. I know Julie and I specifically have of somebody saying, I owe you amends. For what? Well, I was just selfish in general. Selfish how? What are you talking about? I just was. If you can't put on your big girl panties and say what you did, don't come. Don't. Because now I'm wondering, what'd you do? Now you owe me amends. I'm still waiting to collect on that one.
Me too.
I know it. Right? But it means to make it right, so I'm going to ask you specifically, what can I do to make it right? Besides not doing ... whatever it was. You know, if I was dishonest with you or if I took something or whatever it was, besides not doing this again, what else can I do to make it right and get clear with you? I'm telling you, you ask people what you can do to make it right. You'll have the funniest experiences. I remember my grandfather had a list. I didn't even think I'd harmed him that badly, and he made a list. you can do this, you can do this, you can do, and I'm like, what? Right? All right. You want to talk about living amends? That's not you deciding that you're going to be a better person to make an amend. I terribly harmed Julie, but instead of making it right and getting face to face and being a big girl about it, I just decided to be a better person, and we're going to call it a living amend. No, ma'am. Direct amends, face to face. Now, every day when I pay my bills on time, because that was on my list that my grandfather gave me, you can pay your bills on time, you can show up where you're supposed to be, show up early, get there, right? Every time I show up early to a commitment, I'm making a living amend to him. Every time I sign a check and pay a bill on time, that's a living amend to him. See how that works? See how the fellowship wants to make it about an easier, softer way? It's not. It's not. Take it in context for what it is. So, continuing on with that, it says, This will teach you some good stuff about what to do and what not to do. It says, under no condition do we criticize such a person or argue. How easy do you think that would be to do? You just learned how to take inventory. Right. Properly. Right. Now, it's real easy to spot them. Their dishonesty, their selfishness. You've been clocking them for years anyway, judging them. Now you just learned how to put it in a format. It's real easy to do it. Don't do it. You'll be making an amends for the amends. So simply tell him we will never get over drinking until we've done our utmost to straighten out the past. I hear that a lot. Can I go and make amends and not tell him I'm in recovery?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, wow. Or do you want to continue to live that double life? Is that what we're doing now? You know? I don't want anybody to know I'm in sobriety. Oh, my God. They already know. Your truck's been parked next door for a long time. You can't seem to get it right. Your credit card statements read liquor store, liquor store, liquor store, bar. Everybody knows. I don't know if you guys know that. Everybody knows. And if they don't, by God, tell them. Tell them. Your life is not your own anymore. I can't tell you how many times I hear stories of people making amends, and then 3 years later hearing from that person of, you know what, my daughter decided she needed to get sober. I remember you making that amends. Did you say there was a group or a fellowship or something? What? Your life is not your own. Stop hiding your alcoholism. There's no surefire way to get sick than to do that right there. Remember when you're drinking and your world got real narrow because you couldn't let anybody know who you really were?
Yeah.
That's the same concept. Don't close that door. So it says we are there to sweep off our side of the street, realizing that nothing worthwhile can be accomplished until we do so. Never trying to tell him what he should do. His faults are not discussed. That's tough sometimes. We stick to our own. If our manner is calm, frank, and open, we will be gratified with the result. That is one of the coolest promises in amends. We'll be gratified with the result, even if they don't receive it well, even if they're ugly about it. Even if they don't admit that, you are okay. Gratified with the results. All I have to be is calm, frank, and open. But I'm never going to tell him what he should do. I'm never going to discuss his faults. And let me tell you, one of the toughest amends to make is to make an amends for the amends you messed up. I had to do that with one of my sisters. It was really embarrassing. But it sounded a lot like a process group. Where I said, when you said, I felt, and then I misunderstood, and then I did, but if you hadn't, I wouldn't. I was like, oh my God, Audrey, is this what we're doing? It was a botched amends, and I had to go back and go, you know what, Alex, I was totally having a process group with you that was so wrong. I was wrong. Here's what I did. She said, yeah, you didn't even ask me what you could do to make it right. That's when you know you've made too many amends to your family. And they're like, you didn't even get the order right. It's bad. But it says, in 9 cases out of 10, the unexpected happens. Sometimes the man we are calling upon admits his own fault, so feuds of years standing melt away in an hour. I've had that experience. That's kind of neat. It says, rarely do we fail to make satisfactory progress. And you don't get to judge what satisfactory progress looks like. See, I feel better, so therefore I want to think it's okay. Stop making judgments based on your emotions. It's not a good idea. It's really not. Feelings come and go. They're not a point to make decisions on. It says, it should not matter, however, if someone does throw us out of his office. We've made our demonstration, done our part. It's water over the dam. That's another question we hear a lot of times. What if they won't accept my amends? What if I get on the phone and try to schedule an appointment with them and they say, absolutely not, I want nothing to do with you? Then you've made your demonstration. What you can do to make it right with them is leave them alone until they're ready. And it may be 5-10 years down the road and they go, you run into them, they say, you know, kind of cut you short, and if there's something you want to say, I'm willing to hear it. That can happen. That's happened to friends of ours in Dallas. But for the time being, stop stalking them. Stop sending 100 emails. Stop, you know, and I'll block their number and then call star 67. Don't do that. They said leave them alone. They meant it. Leave them alone. There might be a time down the road, but really and truly, it wasn't about the exchange between you guys anyway. It was about the exchange that you had with your Creator. That's what that's about. So I got to see it for what it is. Water over the dam. It says, most alcoholics owe money. Like, pause for effect. Never known one who didn't owe something. It says, we don't dodge our creditors. How many times you done that? You got that certain 866 number? Shoot to voicemail. You know, I watch people do that. It's a hoot. I mean, if you're going to continue to hide and duck and dodge, get ready to drink. 100%. Never seen it fail. Telling them what we're trying to do, we make no bones about our drinking. They usually know it anyway. Who doesn't pay their bills? People like us. They know. They know. There's a problem. They usually know it anyway, whether we think so or not. Nor are we afraid of disclosing our alcoholism on the theory it may cause financial harm. That's what Dr. Bob did. Approached in this way, the most ruthless creditor will sometimes surprise us. Mm-hmm. Arranging the best deal we can, and that's what my directive is to do. We let these people know we're sorry. Our drinking has made us slow to pay. We must lose our fear of creditors no matter how far we have to go if we're liable to drink, if we're afraid to face them. If you're going to be in hiding, you're going to be with a bottle. Keep that in mind, no matter what the situation. Let's say it while we're on it. If you're gay, be gay, right? If you're in debt, be in debt. Be in debt, but come out with it. You know what I'm saying? Like, if you have done some things in the past, let's talk about it. But if you continue to hide, guys, you're going to hide with a bottle. I guarantee you. That was just a little opening I went ahead and took for myself. Sometimes it lays out that way. Arranging the best deal we can. What does that look like? If I owe Angie $500, what I want to do is wait till I have $500 and get in front of her so I can just hand it to her and run away. Right? Because that's kind of how we've interacted in the past. We don't want to handle stuff like that. Be a big kid. Get in front of Angie. Angie, I was wrong. I owed you $500 from 6 years ago. I've been ducking and dodging you. I was doing this and this. Get clear with her on what that was about. Make it right. Can I pay you $25 a week or a month until this is paid off? Is that acceptable to you? If that works for Angie, we're going to roll with it. If it doesn't, I better find something else. I'm going to arrange the best deal I can. It doesn't mean that I'm going to try to, you know, get Angie to come off the price. Would you take $350? You know? I hear that all the time. Well, I got him to come down to, God, stop negotiating. Y'all laugh. Start sponsoring. You're going to hear some fun stuff. Fun stuff. So I'm going to let these people know what the deal is and see what I can do about it. I sponsor a woman that has had so much debt that she was overwhelmed initially. And I'm telling you, she's checking them off the list like nobody's business. Once you get rolling, you get rolling. If you need to seek some outside financial assistance to get with somebody on what does a budget mean? What does it look like to pay stuff on time? Go get it. Go get it. I mean, we get sober. We've got all kinds of resources at our disposal. Go help yourself. Cool. Learn how to do that stuff. And it's going to talk about criminal offenses and not wanting to talk about that kind of stuff. On 79, let me show you something. It says, although these reparations take innumerable forms, there are some general principles which we find guiding. Here's the deal. We've all got stuff in the past, whether it's money, whether it's sex, whether it's criminal offenses, whether it's, you know, cheating, who knows. I've got to get honest, number one, with a sponsor. Somebody's got to help me sift through and see what it is that I need to be doing about this. But we've got some general stuff. It says reminding ourselves, and this is your first ninth step prayer, reminding ourselves that we have decided to go to any lengths, underline, to find a spiritual experience. We ask that we be given strength and direction to do the right thing no matter what the personal consequences may be. That's it. You can apply that prayer to any situation and amends. Any lengths to find a spiritual experience. I have to be willing. That's what it's asking me. There are two themes that run throughout the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. One of them is willingness and the other one's action. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes the action doesn't need to be taken because it causes harm to who? Not you, others. And that's where I'm going to get with a sponsor and say, what is appropriate and what is not appropriate. But no matter what, that first component better be there. I better be willing. That's all I have to be at that point. It says we may lose our position or reputation or face jail, but we are willing. I'm telling you what, I've seen more people willing to face jail but not willing to lose their reputation. That alcoholic ego is a hot mess. It says, but we have to be. We must not shrink at anything. Circle that word, anything. You know, because here's the deal. Everybody wants to come up and take exception and get real specific with a particular amends with some complexities and details, and you don't understand the backstory, and you don't know these people. I don't give a shit. Anything. Are you willing to go to any lengths, or are you not? If you're not, bye-bye. You're going to get loaded, period. Right? And if you are, let's go. And then it talks about not being a martyr and throwing other people under the bus. So it says usually other people are involved. And that's the case sometimes. That's the case. Sometimes other people are involved in some of the stuff that I need to make amends for. I don't get to throw you under the bus to save me. Right? I can take responsibility for my part, but I'm not there to go, oh, and she was there, and he was also over there, and he did more than the rest of them. No. It's time to be a grown-up and take responsibility for your stuff. So it says we're not to be the hasty and foolish martyr who would needlessly sacrifice others to save himself from the alcoholic pit. Julie and I knock off a liquor store, you know. I get sober. Julie's still out there drinking. I don't get to name her. I don't get to do that. I'm there. I go in front of these people, accept responsibility, pay the fines, do the time, whatever it is. But I don't get to throw her under the bus. She wants to come get sober, that'll be on her. Vice versa. See how that works? But I got to get clear about some of that stuff. Do you have anything so far?
No. You're good.
All right. Let's go to 80. Go to the top of page 80. So we'll look at that second ninth step prayer. It says, before taking drastic action, which might implicate other people, we secure their consent. If we have obtained permission, have consulted with others, such as a sponsor, people in your recovery network, ask God to help, and the drastic step is needed, we must not shrink. All right, so there's my second prayer. And this is going to go in and talk about a story of we don't have time to go into all that. Mm-hmm. But go back and read that story. It'll make tons of sense. Down at the bottom it says domestic troubles. And it talks about being mixed up with people in a fashion we wouldn't care to have advertised. I love the language from back then. When you're acting a fool, that's what they should have said. It says, we doubt if in this respect alcoholics are fundamentally much worse than other people. I'm sure they're not. We're all the same. But drinking does complicate sex relations at the home. Then it goes on to talk about what happens when we get mixed up with men and women we don't have any business being mixed up with. And down in that next paragraph, what do I do about that? Because that's always the kind of the first or at least second question that everybody wants to ask in amends. What if I've cheated? Do I tell? If this is a program of honesty, how does that work? So let's look at it. It says whatever the situation, we usually have to do something about it. Something. If we're sure our wife or husband does not know, should we tell them? Not always, we think. See, this is another point where your sponsor is going to be real key for you to discuss this stuff. If they know in a general way that we've been wild, should we tell her in detail? Undoubtedly, we should admit our fault. And then she's going to say, who is she? Where does she work? Because she will want to know the particulars. So you've got to be careful about that kind of stuff because I can't continue to cause harm. It says, we feel we ought to say to her that we have no right to involve another person. We're sorry for what we've done, and God willing, it shall not be repeated. More than that, we cannot do. We have no right to go further. And they go on to talk about no hard and fast rules, just some general principles we find guiding. If your spouse knows that you've been running around, should you be honest about that? In detail, no. In actuality, yes. Does that make sense? Right, so I'm going to go and let them know. They know. If they already know, discuss that. But we don't start naming people for them to vent jealousy on. Right? If you're married or you have significant others, you're dealing with a terrible human emotion called jealousy. And if you continue to provoke that, you continue to cause harm, and that's not okay. If they have no idea, do you tell them? My experience is no. No. I have women today that I owe huge amends to, but I don't have the right to make the amend. But I hold myself in complete readiness to do so. Right? And if the situation arises, I'm there. come hell or high water, I'll make that amend. But to harm that relationship that I've already harmed, I don't get to do that because I feel guilty. Mm-hmm. That's selfish. That's selfish. Well, I just want to get it off my chest. Shame on you. That's not okay. I want to feel better. I can't continue with the self-centered motive. And so that's, but you know, again, get with your sponsor on that. Pull on some experience of the people that are strong in this fellowship that can kind of give you some guiding stuff on that. Do you have anything to add on that?
Mm-mm.
Okay. Go to 82. We'll look at that third. Where are we on the session?
We're okay. Go.
Mm-mm-mm. All right. Continuing on with that topic on 82, about four lines down from the top, is the third ninth step prayer. It says, each might pray about it, having the other one's happiness uppermost in mind. So are we going to let bygones be bygones? Are we going to continue to rehash this? Do we need to go get some therapy? Are there outside resources we can utilize? Sure. But let's pray about this and see what we need to do. Keep it in sight. We're dealing with that most terrible human emotion, jealousy. But it says, if we have no such complication, there's plenty we should do at home. Sometimes we hear an alcoholic say the only thing he needs to do is keep sober. At a nickel. Certainly he must keep sober, for there will be no home if he doesn't, but he is a long way from making good to the wife or parents whom for years he is so shockingly treated. If you don't have shockingly treated highlighted, highlight that. Think about that. Right? The two delusions I sold myself on for a number of years are that I can quit when I want to, and I'm only hurting myself. Turns out that's not the case. Turns out I've harmed a whole lot of people. And to this day, I will never know the extent, not really, of how you know, shockingly I did treat them. Passing all understanding is the patience mothers and wives, uncles, sons have had with alcoholics. Had this not been so, many of us would have no homes today, would perhaps be dead. The funniest thing I ever watch is somebody that's 3 months sober call with a 10th step, and it sounds like this. You know what? I picked up a 3-month chip last week, and my husband still does not trust me with a checkbook. I'm about over that. Right? You've been drunk 27 years, but you've been sober 3 months. I'm talking about, give me that checkbook. Let me back in the bedroom. I'll be picking the kids up at carpool. No, ma'am. You won't until he trusts you. Long period of reconstruction. How dare you put a time frame on that and expect others to hop too? But we all do it. What's your problem? I've been sober a hot minute. Well, sit down. Right? Let us get used to the idea of you not being loaded at dinner. Calm down. All right? There's some mottos in the back of the book. Everybody wants to use them for work in the steps, but they're really to be taken in context with the family. Live and let live. That's to be taken in the context with the family. Calm down. You've scalded them for years. Let them breathe. Right? Like, go and let. I mean, there's a whole section to that. Go read it and see what chapter it's in. The family afterward. Not in the work in the steps chapter.
That's easy does it.
Easy does it.
In the family.
Easy does it with mom and daddy. They don't trust you. Don't ask for their credit card. So it says the alcoholic is like a tornado roaring his way through the lives of others. And you think about that for a minute. We read this paragraph all the time, and it kind of loses its effectiveness. Think about like how a tornado is. It comes, it destroys everything, it leaves certain things that make no sense why they would be left behind. It's careless. You're careless with your behavior. You're careless with your words. You're walking around just slapping everybody and then looking at them like, what? Right? Tornado roaring through other people's lives. And then trying to act like you didn't. Because you've either been in a blackout or you're going, it's not that big of a deal. So not true. But that's the way we behave, which is in turn more hurtful. Mm. You ever had somebody really harm you and then be like, hey, my bad. And you're like, I cried for 3 days. Don't say my bad. That hurt me to my core. Right? You got to really look at that stuff. You've been so consumed with your pain of alcoholism, mm-hmm, and your pain of trying to get sober that we've neglected to see what we've done. I'm telling you, some of you get it because you've been on that other side of it too. It's very hurtful. It says, hearts are broken, sweet relationships are dead, affections have been uprooted, selfish and inconsiderate habits have kept the home in turmoil. Underline that. Selfish and inconsiderate habits have kept the home in turmoil. I want to make it about whiskey. It's not. It's about me, my selfish and inconsiderate habits. one of the funniest things that I see is that the alcoholic thinks that when they stop drinking, all's going to be well. And what's scarier is so do the family. Oh, well, they quit drinking, so all's going to be well. You watch some hell break loose in a household with somebody newly sober. Right? The whiskey's gone, but the selfishness, the dishonesty, the deceitfulness, the manipulation, the wanting to control everybody around you is still in full force. And it will be for a while. It will be until the principles really go to work on the alcoholic. We don't know what we're doing. We don't. Right? It's hard. It says we feel a man is unthinking when he says that sobriety is enough. That's such a delusion. Mm-hmm. We don't know what we don't know. And when it gets pointed out, a sponsor will help you. Absolutely help you. And if a good sponsor is working with your family, too, and helping them to understand, because they're going to get upset. She quit drinking. Why is she still, you know, acting crazy? Yeah, because she's learning to live. I don't want to let a drunk off the hook, but it's the truth. We're learning to live, and we're going to step on some toes in the meantime. Unfortunately, since he's like the farmer who came up out of the cyclone cellar to find his home ruined. To his wife, he remarked, "Don't see anything the matter here, Ma. Ain't it grand the wind stopped blowing?" Untreated alcoholism. Are you done? Are you ready for me to be done?
No, she was asking what page. Bottom of 82 is what page we're on.
Sorry.
I was trying to do hand.
It's like a cheerleading thing.
I am a cheerleader.
You are. All right, top of 83. So it says, yes, there's a long period of reconstruction ahead. I remember my friend Marcia asking one time, that she was telling a story that she asked somebody, how long is long period of reconstruction? And they said to her, longer than 3 months, Marcia. You don't need to hold on, right? Longer than what you think. A remorseful mumbling that we are sorry won't fill the bill at all. And that goes back to watching that toddler on the playground. Sorry. That's not going to fix it. And even a sincere, heart-driven amends does not make it whole. It's the behavior behind it that changes, that solidifies what I did when I came to you to make an amends. And that was just the approach. The way I treat my mother today solidifies what I did 6.5 years ago. That's the amend, the change in the way that we interact. Right? Some people, I don't know, maybe you're different. I was super selfish, and when I was a tiny, tiny kid, I found out that all you had to do was ask God for forgiveness, and it was like a clean slate. And now some of us want to approach men's like that. You know, I get to slap Julie around and go, I need to make amends to you. And then 2 days later, I'm slapping her around again. No. We don't treat it like we did when we found out we could ask God for forgiveness and we would wipe the slate clean. That happens a lot. You don't get to make amends for the same thing over and over and over and over forever. Mm-hmm. Amen. That's not okay. That's not okay. Recovery.
Mm-mm.
It's absolutely not.
Mm-mm.
So it says we ought to sit down with the family and frankly analyze the past as we now see it. Well, how do you now see it? I've walked out of inventory and I know my problems are in my own making. That's how I see it today. Whereas before it was about you and what you didn't do right. Be careful not to criticize them. Their defects may be glaring. Let me assure you, they will be glaring. They will be. You've been taking their inventory for years. You still remember that. But in this conversation, that's about me and what I've done, analyzing this past. It says, but our own actions are partly responsible. Who drove them to be crazy? Who's got a crazy family? Show of hands. We're not videotaping it. It's okay. We won't tell anybody. Right? But who drove them to that? Right? I've got a mother that lives on the edge, because my sisters and I have driven her to the edge. That's alcoholism. Mm-hmm. And I want to act, God, Julie, why didn't you calm down? Because you people have driven her to the edge. You can't have that many drunks in a family and have everybody be normal. It doesn't work that way. People are on edge. Leave them alone. Fourth night step prayer. So we clean house with the family, asking each morning in meditation that our Creator show us the way of patience, tolerance, kindliness and love. And Julie was talking about that prayer earlier. You want to incorporate that into your morning meditation? What a cool thing. What a cool thing. I get to extend the courtesy that I'm seeking in my family. You want those things from them? Why don't you show up with it? Don't ask that from them. So spiritual life's not a theory. We have to live it. There's a lot of us in recovery land talking about it. A lot of us wanting to quote some things, throw some ideas out there, discuss them. It becomes an intellectual exercise. Spiritual life's not a theory. It's about the way I show up. It's about my actions today. I have to live it. I have to. I circle the word we because I have to. Those people out there, they don't have to do anything. They don't. They can do whatever they want. They could be selfish. They could lie. They could do all kinds of stuff. Guess what? They don't drink over it. But this one right here, I better show up with some principles in my life. And when I don't, I better fix it. Because I won't always be perfect, unfortunately. And it goes on to talk about not incessantly talking to them about spiritual matters. That is so funny. Anybody else do that in early sobriety? All you want to do is talk about sobriety? Your family's like, enough. You got sober. We see. It's great. You got some poker chips and stuff. Cool. Calm down. Be with them. Be about them. Stop talking recovery talk with your family all the time. They're interested, but they're not that interested. Right? I remember my mom went with me to a meeting. I'm sure I did 10th step about this later. And she said, I see why you like recovery because it's all about you. I was like, she doesn't get it. Who cares? Stop trying to push them into Al-Anon. That's another fun little thing I've done. So it says we're not going to try to change them. Our behavior will convince them with our words. We must remember that 10 or 20 years of drunkenness will make a skeptic out of anyone. Isn't that the truth? Isn't that the truth? Is it possible to change as a process of working the 12 steps? Absolutely. Is it possible to convince the people around you that you've changed immediately? No. Don't waste your energy doing that. Show up consistently. Practice discipline. See, they'll see that. They will. And if they don't, they weren't meant to. Don't worry about it. So there may be some wrongs we can never fully right. And this is a big category. We don't worry about them if we can honestly say to ourselves we could right them if we could. Right? Some people can't be seen. We send them an honest letter. Right? I can't get to everybody. Some people have passed away, and there's all kinds of cool stuff that you can do with graveside amends. That's always a real neat category of people that seem to think that it won't make a difference. It will. It will. Personal experience tells me that, and the experience of hundreds of people I know in sobriety that have done it. Everything that you would say in an amends, face-to-face, if this person was still living, if they're in prison and they're not coming out, write it on a piece of paper. Everything that you were going to say. We're not going to do therapy and light it on fire. We're going to actually do it. Send the amends letter to the prison. Do it. You don't want to put a return address? Don't. But make it right. You owe somebody that's passed away an amends? Go get in front of their grave. Mm-hmm. You're talking about something powerful? Go read an amends letter, graveside. Mm-hmm. Wow. You think it's just going to be this, okay, I'm going to do it and check it off my list. No, no. You show up and watch what God does. It's one of the absolute coolest things that I've ever seen. But I don't. Where you get in trouble is judging. Kind of like going back to that, well, I don't think I'll ever see that person again, so why should I put them down? Don't decide what it's going to be. Just do it. A friend of ours, John, up in Dallas, talks about going to make an amend to, I believe it was his grandmother, that he bought a bouquet of flowers, wrote an amends letter, and thought, well, this will be kind of sweet. And he went out there and just had an outpouring of emotion. A huge spiritual experience around a graveside of men. See, don't decide what God's going to do. Show up and do it anyway. That your whole recovery will look differently if you can learn to do that kind of stuff. It says we shouldn't delay if it can be avoided. We should be sensible, tactful, considerate, and humble without being servile or scraping. As God's people, we stand on our feet. We don't crawl before anyone. Never. This is what I was talking about earlier. You don't need to be forgiven by these people. Mm-hmm. They want to extend you some courtesy and forgiveness. Cool. What a gift. But we don't go searching for forgiveness. Why? Because I've already been forgiven by God. I don't need your forgiveness. You don't forgive me? Fine. I wish you the best. That's about an attitude, a specific attitude that I take into amends. And then we have the 9-step promises, which are read in every meeting. So we kind of loses its value, which is unfortunate. But it talks about if we're painstaking about this phase, underline that, this phase. You don't get these promises because you showed up in a bunch of meetings. You get these promises because you participated in this phase called what? Amends. You got off your butt and got in front of some people and said, hey, here's the deal. I was wrong. You did some stuff. Right? And while we're on the topic, don't happenstance upon people. I see that all the time. I made amends because I accidentally bumped into them. But could you have made an appointment? Could you have made an effort to get in front of them instead of waiting until you happenstance upon them? Probably. And if you could have, why didn't you? Is that about fear? Or is that about inconsideration still on your part? Right? One of the things I do with the women I sponsor is I tell them to make appointments. You've already been so inconsiderate. Do you want to continue to be inconsiderate with their time? Don't show up at their job. Don't go knock on their doorstep. Call that person and ask for their time. Ask them. I hate for people to just run up on me. It's not always convenient for you to run up on me. Calm down. Ask me if you can have 5 minutes of my time. That's what I do when I ask for an appointment. Is there a convenient time? I think I'll see him at the family reunion. I'll do it. Call him beforehand. I remember my father making amends to our family. He's lining them up at a Thanksgiving. I let everybody know I need to make amends at the Thanksgiving because I won't be seeing everybody. He let them know. And then he, like a cattle call, making amends to the whole family. But the considerate thing to do is give somebody a heads up. Let them know what you're doing. We always just kind of want to slide in there on everything, it seems, in life. Would not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. See, when you can give some closure to something and that you've been carrying around for a number of years, suddenly you're free to talk about it without shame, without embarrassment, without guilt. I'll say things in front of people that are inappropriate because I'm so free of it. It doesn't cross my mind. My mother will shush me a lot of times. Don't say that in public. Don't do that. I don't even think about it because I'm so free of it. It's a non-issue. We laugh today about things that weren't funny a number of years ago. But that's what freedom looks like when you've cleaned it up sufficiently and you've done those things. And it goes on to talk about on 84, our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. The way that I can view stuff is differently. You see, when I've got all these amends and all this heaviness, my world is still small because I can't go the places I want to go. I can't be with the people I want to be with because life looms large. There's a lot to clean up. When I clean it up, all of a sudden I'm free. My whole attitude and outlook upon life begins to change. That's the goal. That's what we're doing. I realize that God's doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. Liquor used to do for me what I couldn't do for myself. Now God's doing it. What a shift. Mm-hmm. It says these are extravagant promises. We think not. They are being fulfilled among us. Sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly, but they will materialize if I work for them. I don't get to judge how the freedom comes and in what form and what it looks like. Sometimes it's immediate and it's awesome and it's overwhelming and it's a spiritual awakening. Sometimes it's a spiritual experience that gradually creeps up on me and I suddenly shift. Did I? Spiritual awakening? Spiritual experience? I say it backwards. I haven't had enough caffeine today, clearly. Spiritual experience. I'm not going to try to redo that. I'm tired.
I think we all are.
It's starting to show. All right. So it really doesn't matter. Sometimes it looks like Bill's experience. Sometimes it looks like Bob's experience. As long as it happens, it happens. So I don't get to judge what that will look like. Do you have anything to add?
It will happen. The thing is it will happen as if we work for it, and that's the words, work. So meaning we got to stay into action. One thing I do want to, before we go on, I don't know about you, if you've been in the fellowship long enough, then you've had an amends made to you in the fellowship. And I think this is where we can get a little catty. And I want to just propose something to you because I've done it and I've had it done to me. I've had it an amends made to me before where they came up and they said dot, dot, dot. And I'm thinking, didn't know we had a problem. Thought we were friends. Clearly we're not because I'm not even clear on what this amends is all about. You're just telling me you're here to make amends because you're selfish, dishonest in our relationship. Okay. Not clear on that, but now I know you don't like me. I mean, really, that's what you're telling me. And so I sat there bewildered while she was making the amends, and because I was just kind of dumbfounded because I thought we were good. I said, no, you're fine. I don't need anything. I thought we were okay. She walked away. I walked away. I felt horrible. Because the thing is I have to remember anybody making amends to me, I should know why they're making amends. They're making amends to get connected to God. That's the driving force. It has nothing to do with me. And as a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, I should be receptive however it comes, whether I think it's right or whether I think it's wrong. I can't judge that person. So I was able to go back to her and say, listen, babe, I'm so sorry I wasn't receptive to your amends, and I so apologize, and I so regret the way. I don't want to get in between you and God. Please forgive me. And it was all groovy. I have also been on the other hand where I have made amends to somebody in the fellowship, and I told him exactly why I was making amends, and he proceeded to tell me that he didn't think I was sincere in making this amends. And so I initially walked away very hurt, and he said, I wish you hadn't have made amends to me. When I said, what can I do to make it right? He goes, I wish you hadn't have made amends to me. I walked off very hurt. I called my sponsor, and I said, and he said, don't worry about it. He'll have a sponsor to talk to. And so I said, okay. The thing is when I went home that night and did my nightly review and got home and sat with God, I felt closer to God. I did what I needed to do. Sometimes we're going to be thrown out of an office. Sometimes we're going to be hugged. Everything, it's never going to look like what we think it's going to look like. And sometimes we shortchange God, right? I'll never forget the next time I was going through the steps. I was going through the steps with Cliff, and I had gone to the treatment center that I had gone through to do their little Sunday thing to whatever. I'd pick up a chip or something. And so I'm sitting there one night, and it was I had to make my amends list. And on my first amends list, I did not put this old boyfriend down. And I have old boyfriends that I treated so shockingly. Surprise. But I sat there, and I had this little conversation with God, and I'm like, okay, I am so never going to see him again. That's exactly how I said it. I am so never going to see him again, God, but I'll tell you what. I will put him down. Like I'm doing God a favor, right? Like, I mean, that's seriously how I will put him down, and if you think it's appropriate, whatever. And I wrote him down. I mean, that I'm willing to do it. The next day, I go up to the hill, and I do my little thing, and I look in the back of the room, and there he is. And I haven't seen him in 10 years. See, I'm willing, and God shows up. As long as I'm willing, and I was able to make amends. My other point to this is that your sponsor's not always going to be there on the fly. There's no cell reception there. I can't get a hold of my sponsor and go, oh my God, I got to make an amends right now. So I prayed. I did it in front of his wife because he was married. I felt like that was the appropriate thing not to cause any jealousy with her, and I did it in front of her, and I just vaguely said how I harmed him, and we're good. But the thing is I think we always have a vision of what it's supposed to look like, and we always have an expectation of what it's supposed to look like, and then once we're done, it's never that. And once we get home and have that quiet time with God, we feel even more walking hand in hand with him. That's the cool part of that.